Our brackets may be busted, but the show must go on. The NCAA men's tournament wraps up tonight in Indianapolis. Over the weekend, Duke shut down the Mountaineers of West Virginia, and this will be a chance for the Blue Devils and Coach K to win their fourth championship. But everyone is abuzz about their opponents, the Cinderella Butler Bulldogs, who edged Michigan State on Saturday night. In San Antonio, the women's tournament is down to two as well. The good news for the Stanford Cardinal is that they lost just one game all season long. The bad news is that they lost it by plenty to the mighty UConn Huskies, who will take a 77-game winning streak into the final tomorrow night. And in the background of the Final Four is the NCAA could expand the tournament from 65 to 96 teams as soon as next year. If you have questions about the college game on and off the court, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. NPR correspondent Mike Pesca joins us from our bureau in New York. Mike, nice to have you back with us.
Is this the greatest sports day of the year? It's opening day also. Everything's going on.
Everything's going on. And I have not seen Gene Hackman on TV this much since... I don't think I've ever seen Gene Hackman on TV this much.
They could be playing French Connection on a loop. You wouldn't see him that much, yes.
This is the relation, of course, to the movie Hoosiers, in which Gene Hackman starred. And that took place in a gym that, as it turns out, the little tiny high school Milan, Indiana, won its state high school championship in the same gym that the Butler Bulldogs use as their regular gym.
Yes, Hinkle Gymnasium, and they were called Hickory High in the movie. I mean, the parallels and the coincidences go way beyond that. For instance, Bobby Plump, who was the real guy who hit the real shot from Milan High School, he wound up going to Butler, wound up being one of their best players. He runs a bar called Bobby Plump's Last Shot. It's a big Butler bar in Indianapolis. Willie Beasley, the guard on Butler, who was a Freeport Pretzel, by the way. That was the nickname of his high school. Willie Beasley claims to have watched Hoosiers over 200 times. This is the Hoosier story embodied.
And the Butler campus is, what, 6 miles away from the Dome Stadium where the final is being held tonight.
Right. So if you've heard anything about Butler, you've heard all these facts and you've heard the word Cinderella. But thinking about it, this is what I was wondering. What do we mean by Cinderella? Even people who are paying some attention to this Butler run might be surprised to learn that Butler was ranked number 10 in the coaches poll in the preseason. So this is not a Cinderella out of nowhere story unless, you know, there was a poll of princes and the princes all knew that Cinderella was the fairest lady in all the land. They're a good team, a very good team. They have a great player, Gordon Hayward, who is going to be drafted higher than anyone on Duke, most likely. So I think they're a Cinderella because they don't have resources and they play from a historically small conference. So history and pedigree is not on their side, but just look at the kids who make up that roster. Very good basketball team.
And there's about 3,900 students, I think, at Butler, but it's not as if Duke is Ohio State.
No, but with this sort of history that Duke has, they can and do recruit anyone in the country. They've had top 100 players, top 10 players, what they call McDonald's All-America players. The best player on Butler, they do have one guy named Matt Howard who might not play tonight because he has a concussion. That was Butler's best recruit ever. He was a top 100 player, and he decided to go to Butler instead of Indiana, which almost never happens. And Butler's best player now, Gordon Hayward, who I mentioned, he had an offer to go to Purdue. It's where both his parents went. He said Butler just felt right to him, and now that decision is being rewarded.
And I think Duke is favored to win the contest tonight. If Butler wins, it would be the first time a number 5 seed would win the tournament, but that's kind of a statistical oddity.
And lower seeds have won. When Villanova pulled that great upset against Georgetown in 1985, even though they were two Big East schools, so what's called power conferences now, Villanova was an 8 seed. And lower seeds have won. It's not so much the seeding, it's what Butler represents. It's how small the school is, and their, you know, 33-year-old coach who still gets carded, and how close it is to the arena in Indianapolis, the mecca of basketball. Sorry, Kentucky, you know, you're the Medina of basketball, fine. But Butler is a great story, but Duke is a great team, and they've been playing great lately. And Butler's big problem, just from a basketball standpoint, is that Duke is so tall, and they have a 7-foot center, and they have a 6-foot-5-inch point guard. And so even if Duke doesn't make its first shot, they're great at grabbing the offensive rebound and taking a second shot and taking a third shot. And that's why Duke has not even been playing close games in this tournament. Their shooting is great, and their offensive rebounding is also great.
They've got those brothers who also get the ball on the offensive boards. And
the
interestingly,
Plumleys,
yes. Yeah, and interestingly, they tend, and that great center, to not just put the ball up for two, but to pass it out to their great three-point shooters who, after a rebound, tend to have an open look.
Yes, this is when we think about a great offensive rebounding teams, usually it brings to mind a tough, brawling team, and what they do with the offensive rebound is they put it right up. Duke has been trained, their big men who grab the rebounds know to kick it back out, and their three-point shooters have really been on. In the game, in Duke's closest game, which the final score didn't indicate it was that close, but against Baylor, there was one sequence where Duke came down, missed the shot, threw it back out to a three-point shooter, and that shooter made a shot. It happened three times. That's a 9-point swing. That's the whole game right there. Other than those possessions, and those possessions count, by the way. Let's not discount them.
Mm-hmm.
Baylor certainly played with Duke. So the question is Butler, which is not as athletic and tall as Baylor was, are they going to be able to limit the offensive possessions or at least stop those three-point shooters from finally burying the ball in the hoop?
Mike Pesca is with us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Larry's on the line from Little Rock.
How you guys doing?
Good.
I cannot believe that that Butler made it. I did four, you know, charts on ESPN and had them going to, at the most, the Sweet 16, because I knew they were a good team. But I just don't think that – I think that they can actually still win, though, because they beat all these other teams.
Oh, they have a very effective defense, don't they, Mike?
Yes, and Larry, I did 10 of those. That's the maximum you're allowed to fill out on ESPN. And I think in most of them I had Butler losing to UTEP in the first round, so that shows you what I know. But Butler has a good defense. Butler essentially says this line in the sand, which the NCAA is nice enough to actually map out on the court, the three-point line, here's where we make our stand. They don't allow the other team to take threes, and they pack it in inside to try to grab defensive rebounds. They're not a great offensive rebounding team. They don't play the same kind of offensive style that Duke does. So whoever controls more rebounds, that's going to be one of the keys to the game.
Wow. Well, hey, thank you guys so much for having me on. I listen all the time. Have a great day.
Appreciate the phone call, Larry. In the meantime, the women's final game looks a little bit more predictable.
Well, insofar as the two best teams in college basketball all year have been the UConn, the University of Connecticut, and Stanford. But when we say the two best teams, we're sort of talking about, I don't know, Earth and the Moon are two celestial bodies. UConn is dominant. UConn has not come close to losing this year. One team came within 12 points of UConn, and that was the opponent's best showing. That team happens to be Stanford. And even if you look at the semifinal games, Stanford had a big lead against Oklahoma, and then Oklahoma made a run against them. The UConn game, if you read some of the stories, they point out that Baylor, UConn was playing the Baylor women's team, Baylor got within 4 points at one point in the second half. They're trying to find any point in the whole game where it was maybe going to be close. And that's the best you could do. That's how dominant UConn is. I've been looking around to see if Las Vegas has a betting line and who is the favorite, and I don't see it. But I wouldn't be surprised if the people who tell you how much teams will win by predict that UConn should win by at least 11 points.
And this after Baylor. Baylor's got one really tremendous player, but utterly outmatched at every other position.
Yeah, well, Brittany Griner, who is a great player, and she's dunked in a game, which is very rare in women's basketball, and she also got a lot of headlines because she threw a punch that connected and was suspended, and that got a lot of attention. But Brittany Griner was contained by UConn center Tina Charles, and UConn has this other great, great player, Maya Moore.
Yeah.
Who is a joy to watch, and Stanford is a deeper team, probably. Stanford has a few players who could score, but no one has come close to having an answer for Tina Charles and Maya Moore.
Let's see if we get another caller on the line. Let's go to Jason. Jason with us from Petaluma in California.
How are you doing?
Hometown to Charles Schultz. Go ahead.
Good, yeah. Actually, my question was geared towards the NCAA expanding the tournament to 96 teams and unfortunately, what that'll do is create more teams like Butler, giving them a chance to, like the other announcer said, to come out of nowhere and be the Cinderella. But what it's also doing is it seems that NCAA is in defense of their actions, as they are in the spirit of the student athlete and they want to talk about the game, but they're taking advantage and making millions of dollars off of these kids in contracts and TV contracts, as schools are getting money. And it's unfortunate that they're making the tournament bigger and making more money as a result of that.
Well, let me ask you about this. Is it a fait accompli at this point, Mike Pesca, that it's going to be 96 teams next year?
Yeah, the writing definitely seems to be on the wall. What the caller just stated there about money, that's it exactly. And the NCAA is pretty upfront about that. If you look at the official proposals in parentheses about why to expand the tournament, there's a phrase, to increase revenue. No one really thinks that teams that are being left out have a strong shot of winning the championship. And no one really thinks that there's a flaw with this 64-team format. But everyone knows that Americans aren't actually huge fans of college basketball, but they are huge fans of the college basketball tournament. So it's more of a good thing as the NCAA thinks about it. Also, a good point was made. There will be fewer, if a team makes it far in this expanded field, they will miss more classes. But we're talking about, you know, two or three classes. In a press conference, the president of the NCAA dissembled a little bit on that point.
Well, that's exactly what they say when they say, why don't you have a football playoff?
Yeah, and that's the other thing. It kind of shows the hypocrisy of the NCAA. One thing they always say is, well, our student athletes need time to study. Oh, yeah, well, what about when money's on the line in basketball? Well, then, you know, they could maybe talk to tutors. I should mention, we don't have word on this yet, but this is the first time that a team could go to classes in the afternoon and attend their national championship game in the evening. So I'd like to see if any of the Butler students attended classes. The president did not excuse them from classes, so a few of them may have been studying some calculus in the afternoon, and they'll be playing for a national championship tonight. It's kind of nice to talk about the student-athlete, and the NCAA always makes sure you call them the student-athlete. But really, when the athletics take such prominence, being a student necessarily suffers a bit.
Well, Jason, thanks very much for the phone call. We're talking with Mike Pesca, NPR's Mike Pesca, at our bureau in New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Mike, if the tournament does expand, one of the victims of this would be the NIT, the National Invitational Tournament, which I guess is now owned by the NCAA. But that meant that this year's tournament would have been the last one. There wouldn't be no also-rans tournament that would be culminated at Madison Square Garden anymore. And a lot of people are saying the way it would break down is that there would be 8 teams in each regional division that would get byes in the first round.
So think about it this way. Take the regular bracket that we all know, which is 32 on each side, and then just add another list of 32. So the top 32 teams will get a bye and will have to play one fewer game, and everyone else will play. So for the bottom 64 teams, if you want to look at it like that, they'd have to win 7 games to be national champions. The top 32 teams would have to only win 6 games. Now, the point was raised, will this allow for more Cinderellas? I don't know. I don't know that the teams who are the 50th or 60th best in the country or the 80th best in the country really have a shot at winning that many games. We're going crazy about Butler being a Cinderella story, but they were one of the top 10 teams to begin the season, one of the top 10 ranked teams to end the season. And as a 5 seed, the NCAA committee is at least saying they're at least the 20th best seed. So I don't know if we're going to get big runs to the tournament from this expanded field. It really just is about money. And I guess you could argue a few more days of excitement for the NCAA tournament. The big victim will be the regular season, because really any halfway decent team is going to make the postseason. So that's a disincentive to win the regular season. And the huge victim will be the NIT, which can be a fun tournament. It really can. I go to NIT games every other year, and Dayton versus the University of North Carolina, that was a good game this year.
A lot of people say that, you know, the big college tournaments, the conference tournaments at the end of the year would also be devalued along with the regular season. But isn't everybody going to be scrapping to get into that elite top 32 so that we get a first round bye?
Right. And since sports thrives on having a controversy, the controversy will no longer be which are the teams that barely made it in, because those teams will be like the the epitome of mediocre. I don't know if you could have a hyperbole dealing with mediocre, but they will be, you know, very mediocre teams who do or don't get in. People will argue, who's the 33rd best team? You know, why did that team get ranked as the last team to get a bye? And why did this team be, why was this team forced to play an extra game? So at least that, you know, will create some sports radio fodder and help the economy in that way.
Well, let's get Bob on the line. Bob with us from Rapid City in South Dakota.
Hello, Mr. Cohen. I just wanted to say in a not-too-serious tone that I hope that Butler can win simply because I want to see a headline the next day that the Butler did it.
Yeah, in the dome with a candlestick, I suspect.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen a few of those, not only for Butler, but for Deshaun Butler, who had some big shots. He was a one-man gang against Kentucky and against Duke. Deshaun Butler, who could have been drafted in the NBA, suffered a horrific injury, and he hurt his ACL. And that really shows the horrid side sometimes and the costs of college basketball. If you saw that image of his tough coach hugging him on the floor, a little bit of a heartbreaking moment there in Indianapolis.
Bob, thank you for the show.
Thank you very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. And you mentioned the Butler coach who still gets carded. I don't think he gets carded at Plum's last shot.
At Bobby Plum's last shot.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. No, if you ask him about it, he says, Bobby Plum, oh, yeah, that guy makes a mean pork chop, I think, is his favorite dish. He's a regular there. That's no exaggeration.
NPR correspondent Mike Pesca with us today from our bureau in New York, where he will be glued to the flat screen tonight to watch the final of the men's tournament in Indianapolis. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Tomorrow we'll talk with Piper Kerman about the year she spent in federal prison and her new book, Orange is the New Black. Join us then. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.